This is Pure Decking, show number 433 for Thursday, April the 22nd, 1945. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and reminding you that the voices are not real, but they do have some interesting ideas occasionally. I'm Morps. Tonight, we have MedMen. What is up, MedMen?
I'm alive, and it's almost the weekend. Woohoo! About it. Oh. Up 24 pounds lighter than I was 11 days ago.
Congrats. That's excellent, dude. And we have Aryu.
So, it's been a quick week. It has flown past this week. Busy week. Woke up, thought it was Thursday.
It is Thursday.
Not for me, it's not. I thought I had another day before the show.
I've got the opposite problem. I've got it's gotten so silly at work lately that it's just kind of like, you know, you accept that it's going to be stupid and awful and it stops being so bad kind of thing. It's like I keep expecting better and it keeps not happening. So you just accept it's going to be miserable and suddenly the stress seems to go away. How does that that shouldn't work that way.
That's what they want you to do, man. Okay.
Submit, die on the inside.
Die on the inside, consume, and get excited for next product, because that's all you have to look forward to, is the next consumable product. Eat, sleep, go to work, consume.
Yeah, well, luckily I've got my own projects.
You have such a sad view of life. I would have blown someone's brains out if I thought that way.
That's why they took our guns, madman.
They didn't
they
want
took
you to go,
the guns, then the fun.
They didn't want you to go, wait a minute, I have a gun. Yeah,
exactly. I don't know, man. They might be teaching us all to shoot real soon. Hopefully.
As long as they don't just plan on teaching you to submit.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's not going to happen on my part anyway. I have a little problem with authority.
Rat says, or was it a waste of ammo with the EMU, with the emus?
It was, actually. We did not harvest as much meat for as much lead as we were meant to put down range. If you actually are interested in reading that story, it's very funny. It's exactly what you think would happen when you have an overreactive government situation to a very simple problem.
Do emus taste good?
I don't know. Never eaten one.
They're really big chickens, right?
What I've heard.
Oh, man.
Do you remember the emu scam the 90s?
Yeah, a few people in the U.S. fell for it and tried to start emu farms.
Yeah.
I never bought their meat, though.
No, neither did I. I never got around to it.
Actually, Madman, there's at least there used to be a place not terribly far from either one of us now. Where you potentially could get emus. It was more of a zoo, so I doubt they sold the meat.
you could always just grab one and run.
Those are very large birds. I don't know about trying to grab one and run.
With really large claws. I mean, I'd like to go up to the zookeeper and, like, I would like the big angry one. Would you suggest the Creo injectable jalapeno butter before I deep fry the whole bird?
I mean, it's basically they're not that different from fucking raptors. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, Madman, the zookeeper's like racking the shotgun going, my pleasure, sir. I hate that big bastard.
My understanding is they're all pretty dumb.
I'll bring you back a wing.
I mean, they're pretty aggressive animals around food.
Anyways, so I guess get into the first article here. This is from appleinsider.com. Man sues Apple for terminating Apple ID with $24,000 worth of content. Which at first sounds like a lot, but then you think about it that some people have had their same Apple account since like original iPods were a thing, and you know, so you know, 15, 20 years, maybe it's not that outlandish that they might have you know, accumulated quite a bit of content in there, especially if they'd never heard of BitTorrent.
I was just looking around with all my DVDs and CDs. I bet I have $25,000 worth of media just in the old school shape. If you want to consider DVDs and CDs old school.
Are you counting your Netflix archive in that, Madman?
No, I am not. I'm talking about legitimately purchased shit. But if you want to toss in my Netflix archive, oh, God. I was attempting to store a warehouse full of movies in my living room in case, you know, one of their distribution centers accidentally caught fire.
Well, you want to have backups for them.
And I was being nice. I didn't charge them for storage space.
Unlike Amazon.
Yeah.
Apple has been hit with a lawsuit alleging that its media service terms and conditions, which permit the company to terminate an Apple ID, are unlawful and unconscionable. The complaint filed on Tuesday in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California goes after an Apple services clause that states a user with a terminated Apple ID cannot access media content that they've purchased. Through its terms and conditions, Apple retains the right to terminate an Apple ID. More than that, the lawsuit claims that Apple can terminate an account based on mere suspicion, which is true. These things aren't going through like a court of law or anything. It's just, you know, some, well, let's be frank, underpaid contractor at Apple making these decisions. For the most part, unless you've really pissed them off. You know, did the whole executive email carpet bomb thing to their C-level or something. That'd be a quick way to get your Apple ID terminated, probably. Quote, Apple's unlawful and unconscionable clause as a prohibited de facto liquidated damages provision, which is triggered when Apple suspects its customers have breached its terms and conditions, the lawsuit reads. Additionally, the complaint claims that users with Apple devices will find their products, quote, sustainably diminished in value, unquote, if their Apple IDs are terminated, since they won't be able to access Apple services or purchased content. The plaintiff in the case, Matthew Price, reportedly spent nearly $25,000 on content attached to an Apple ID. When Apple terminated Price's Apple ID for an alleged violation of its terms and conditions, Price lost access to all that content. According to the complaint, the $25,000 worth of media includes apps, in-app purchases. Well, some of those are just...
Okay, on the in-app purchases, I almost don't think that should count. The app, yeah. But if you spend an extra $25 for a loot box... You're an idiot.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, if you bought that many tokens in whatever game, I don't even know the game to make fun of anymore. What is it? You know, in Raid or whatever, I don't think Apple's only keeping a percentage of that. But I guess you did lose access to what you purchased when they turn off the thing.
Yeah.
Let's see. Programs and platforms extensions and related services. The plaintiff also let... Oh, I didn't even think about that. Programs. If this guy's on a Mac, they do their app store on the Mac, too, for things like their video editor and their the audio editors, and some of that software is expensive. So you could be talking about desktop applications here, too. I didn't even think about that. The plaintiff also alleges that Apple prevents users from accessing unused funds attached to an Apple account. Price, for example, had about $7 in iTunes credit. The lawsuit doesn't specify why Price's account was terminated. However, it does claim that Apple shut down the Apple ID, quote, without notice, explanation, policy, or process, unquote. Goes on to claim that Apple's conduct, specifically the clause and resulting terminations, are unfair, unlawful, fraudulent, and illegal, and alleges that Apple is in violation of several consumer regulations in California. I actually don't doubt that. California is pretty pretty heavy-handed on its regulations. Her rat says, what if he's a pro photographer and he's locked out of his Adobe Creative Cloud or something? Wouldn't that be a separate... Wouldn't Adobe Creative Cloud be separate than from his Apple ID? Although I guess you couldn't access the apps. I don't know.
I've never used Apple, so I don't know.
Yeah. I've never gotten an account locked out on Apple before. I've had several accounts for doing stupid shit, but... You know, I had one Apple ID that I was specifically using with Hackintoshes. It never got locked out, so I don't actually know. And those bullshit accounts, I never spent any money in because I was expecting them to get locked out. It is handy to own domain names when you're setting up bullshit accounts, by the way. Because it makes it easy to have lots of email addresses.
Well, then now there's email companies that like to make spoof email addresses and delete them.
Oh, yeah, there's one that, yeah, there's several of them out there that'll let you spin up like a 15-minute email or something like that. But
yeah, 10-minute email, man. That's yeah. All you got to type in.
But these were things that I needed to maintain a little bit longer term than that. I actually wanted to get the emails and the accounts, so. But, yeah, I was fully expecting some of those Hackintosh accounts to get banned when they figured out that they were on... You know, Fakintosh Pro and some of these other system names I had, because I'm like, I am certain these system names are going back to Apple. But after a little bit, I figured out they just didn't care, probably because I never spent any money. So her rats is also saying, what about other personal photos in iCloud? Did those get wiped? You know, I don't know. It doesn't say. I don't know that they would have gotten wiped. They might just be locked out. I mean, you know, these cloud guys never actually delete anything. So
how effectively do they brick the system when you're revoked? Because
well, it depends on what you set up.
Yeah. Because at that point, it wouldn't just be the price of what he bought. They're withholding personal property.
Well, I mean, you'll be able to use an Apple device without an iTunes account, but... You know, especially on iPads and stuff like that, they try so hard to push so many things into iCloud. You know, they used to give you choices. Then they stopped asking and started doing it by default. So you got to go into the settings and turn it all off.
If you didn't turn it off and all your pictures are in iCloud,
yeah,
get to them?
No.
Then yeah, that'd be kind of withholding your personal property, in my opinion. Not just you can't use the apps you bought for them, which should also be your personal property, is what this guy's arguing. But then non-app related items that you've been locked out of?
Yeah, I don't know if they give you a way to get that stuff back or not. I would assume not, because they're saying you violated terms of service. So the lawsuit is seeking class action status with a nationwide class consisting of people in the U.S. who have had their Apple IDs terminated. It asks for a jury trial seeking permanent injunction barring Apple from engaging in the allegedly unlawful behavior, restitution of funds lost during account termination, damages, and attorney fees. So here's the question, though, because you know it is in the fine print that you're not purchasing these items, you're purchasing a license to access these items through their service. I mean, you know it's in there somewhere. And you also know it's in there that they have the right to terminate your account at any time for violation of terms of service. You know, if Apple can prove that this guy did violate their terms of service in a meaningful way, is that the end of the case? Because like we were talking about earlier, these EULAs and shrink wrap licenses and things like that haven't really been tested that much in court, to my knowledge anyways.
Can they prove that he read the terms of service?
Well, by clicking OK, you say you did. So.
That doesn't mean you've read it, or doesn't even mean you understand it. A lot of law for... legal documents, the reason the lawyer's there is to explain it to you, because you have to comprehend what you're signing for your signature to matter in many legal instances. And I know this hasn't been, you know, adjudicated into one of those instances, but there's precedent for if you don't know what you're signing, your signature means shit. And then you have to go with how many people actually read it. If it's common knowledge that everyone skips to the end and clicks OK because they want to use the phone that they just bought for $200, and that's the only way to use the phone you bought for $200, kind of saying the EULAs mean nothing. Perhaps you need to agree to the EULA before you can purchase the phone. So you agree to the terms and read them before Apple actually gets your money and hands you a product that might be more legally binding than...
Well, basically, you would have to go into an Apple store to get a phone or a product, sit down with a lawyer, and, you know, get it notarized. Because that's the other thing.
What a great customer experience.
None of these things are notarized, right? So,
yeah.
I don't... Like I said, like we were kind of talking about it in the chat here, too, that a lot of times... When you have a legitimate thing with these EULAs where a company's misbehaving, either they're going to pull it off into arbitration or they'll just quietly settle so they don't. Because the last thing any of these companies want is a court invalidating their EULA or their shrink wrap agreements. Although you did just remind me of an interesting experience. Last year I bought one of those indoor, quote-unquote, smokeless electric grills to try to see if it did any good. Did better than, like, a George Foreman or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's not smokeless, and I don't think using it inside is a good idea. I know they advertise that. It didn't set off any fire alarms, but, you know, the house smelled like steak for, like, a month, which is not the worst thing in the world, but after a while, you know, I finally got it aired out, but actually it turns out the ventilation and circulation in this place is not great. So that's when you discover, oh, it's not really a cooking kitchen. It's more of just a room we call the kitchen. Anyways. It's like, yeah, it's got an oven and a stove in there, but we don't really think you need to be using that. Anyways. Using it out on the back patio is fine. And it's just an electric grill, right? Well, when I open the damn box, one of the things that fell out of it is, by purchasing this product, you have agreed to this binding arbitration agreement. I watered it up and threw it away. Because other than me saying it on this show where I don't give my real name, prove I read that. Prove I knew.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have me buy a product, then have that in there. It did have in fine print at the bottom, if you don't agree to this binding arbitration agreement, you must return the product right away. It's like, fuck you. That's not
Well, necessary. How do they know that it was even packed in there?
Well, that's...
Like, it might have been missing.
If it burned the house down and I had to sue them, I would say, what binding arbitration agreement?
Yeah.
You know, Oh, well, we include a little piece of paper in every box. I didn't see a piece of paper in there.
Yeah, I include a little note on every check I write. If any of my shit burns down, you owe me $1 billion. Give me some fucking money.
Yeah.
You agreed to it when you accepted my check.
So... Yeah. Oh, you can't see that on there?
Is this lawsuit going to deal with that? Is that what we're going to see with this?
I have a feeling it's either going to... Well, because things aren't very broadly defined, Apple's going to move to get it dismissed. And they probably will. They'll probably get it dismissed. They'll just show that, look, this guy did violate EULA. Here's where he did it. And it'll just... peter out and we'll never hear anything about it, or it'll get forced off to binding arbitration, or they'll give him shut up money and he'll go away.
And if he actually does fight it and it goes to the courts, it depends on how the judges rule, because they can narrow how they're ruling, where it may just affect this case or certain aspects of this case.
Well, so I mean, I would like to... Go ahead.
I was going to say, so the EULA might be binding in that they can terminate your account, but they have to give you access to the stuff you've already purchased or something like that.
Well, usually the problem is usually with things like this, what it usually ends up doing is in the next version of the terms of service, there'll be an update that, you know, just to make sure you're aware, if you violate this, you would lose all access to everything you've purchased through this account. And then probably some new things in there about how you have to, you can't sue them for that. That's probably what we're going to, the net result is what we're going to see out of it is the next Apple legal agreement's going to have shit in there about that.
Yeah, break Apple up. Along with the rest of them.
You know, going back and reading a little bit on the breakup of AT&T, I don't know about Apple. I don't know how that would work. I wouldn't mind seeing their software division divested from their hardware division, but I think one of the reasons their software is decent is because they fund it with the hardware, so that might be kind of how that works. I'm not 100% sure there, but yeah, Facebook, Google, Twitter, yeah, break them up. That'd be fun.
Yeah,
I don't know that it would accomplish very much, but it'd be fun.
Amazon.
Yeah,
definitely Google.
And the reason I say that, especially with Google, is because Google is making strides to turn the internet into the Google network.
Yeah, I know.
The main browser everyone uses is Chrome, and they've just recently put out, I don't have any articles on it, but they've been trying to push this new Flock protocol, which is, you know, it's got some other things in it, but the big thing it does is you can use it for ad tracking. And it's like, really? I mean, that's just kind of blatant. You know, and they're really, really trying to make it where the internet is just a Google thing. And then you partner with Amazon or Facebook or whoever the hell else. And I don't want to.
Yeah, I'll go back outside. I'm done with technology at that point.
I kind of miss the internet being an underground kind of thing and not so mainstream.
Yeah.
I know this isn't Apple, but I actually pulled up Amazon because that's one of the few things where I can purchase things that would not be physical or mine. And I'm looking at buying a digital copy of Wonder Woman, and it does say buy, which indicates ownership.
Now, well, I think that's going to be part of this guy's lawsuit, is because that's what it says in all of the, like on my iPad, when I go into the store and buy an app, the button says buy. It doesn't say license.
Yeah, because if it's not mine to view whenever, that indicates either leasing or long-term rental for an exceptionally cheap price. But it's, buy indicates ownership. We've kind of settled that. And one thing that isn't going to be touched on by this case, even if it goes to court, I think you should have the right to sell your digital property. So if I own a digital copy of, I don't know, Left 4 Dead, I should be able to sell it just like a physical copy.
Yeah, this should be a rental, an ex-ownership market.
Well, that's something to think about. Like, are you and I both like the classic gaming consoles and old computers and things like that. And like, there's a real secondhand market for, you know, NES games, SNES games,
yeah,
Genesis.
That's a physical thing, though.
That's not going to exist, you know, for somebody wanting to go back and play some classic game that was released on early iPads. That's not going to exist for games that were only ever released on a digital market. I mean, yeah, you'll have services that do like a GOG or like what Nintendo does where you can download and play them on the modern hardware, but it's all going to be locked up in subscription services. It's all going to be locked up in, you know, because everybody wants that monthly fee nowadays. They don't want you to just pay once and have something. They want that subscription. And then if you don't pay that subscription, they want to be able to cripple your shit so that you will pay that for subscription.
It's a generation from now, so it's your responsibility as a parent to back up and secure all your old gaming to hand down to your kids. Like, that's what that's going to be about. Or you know, there's going to be just an underground piracy thing. Want to play that game here? Here's a copy of the old school OS. Go spin it up and yeah, now you can play this game.
Well, that's actually interesting. You mentioned the piracy aspect of it because, you know, I've been messing with the Amiga stuff, mostly emulate. Well, I say emulating. It's on an FPGA board. It's on the Mister. But I have been messing around with running Amigas on the Misters. And all of the game archives and libraries and shit you find for Amiga, it's all the old stuff that was cracked from copy parties. You're not finding legitimate archives of anything. It's because everything's got crack tros in front of it or the little cheat menus that come up and say, you want infinite lives? You want all this? Cracked by team executor or whatever the hell, right? So it's like, you know, the pirated stuff from like the Amiga days is what ended up getting archived for posterity. And I think you're right. I think that's what it's going to be for a lot of these PC games, a lot of things like, you know, what we would call mobile games now, but eventually that's just going to be classic gaming for somebody. I don't particularly understand why somebody would feel nostalgic for like the first version of Angry Birds, but somebody might. I mean,
it's 2 a.m. You're looking to play something, you know, just not anything that's brain, you know, intense. That's where that would come in.
I mean, I still like breaking out classic Super Mario Brothers occasionally. You know, Super Mario Brothers 3, the NES one? Fuck yeah.
Yeah. The original Zelda?
Oh, yeah. I don't really get
knowing
for
how
the
market
games, strangely enough, but anyways.
Unless you're talking about, was it Missile Command? I'd play Missile Command right now, actually.
Or war.
It's just not the same without the giant tracking ball for Missile Command. But anyway, depending on how the next couple of years go in technology and stuff like that, Morps, the only way I could see around it is having some sort of cracked club. Either it's a physical thing where you know someone who's going to be able to give you a copy on a hard drive, or you're just going to go out and find it on the internet. But if it's going to be as locked down like the Google internets, I think we'll see a return to hard copy.
Well, I was just thinking, a while back I did some Xbox modding, and I'm pretty sure Madman still has his modded Xbox. Because I remember,
yeah, it still works.
Yep. Mine disappeared in one of my moves, and, you know, at first I was like, oh well. But, more to think about it, more I'm like, damn, that was a unique setup, and that's going to be, you know, how you do some of this stuff is, you know, having the old systems modded, because like we were talking about last week with the PlayStations, where they're going to lose that ability to run the clock check.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody's going to have to crack them, mod the firmware to not do that, so you can still play the old games, because eventually somebody's going to want to play, you know, PlayStation 3 games when they're, you know, classics.
No. Go ahead. I just can't see it apart from having physical copies. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think you're right.
If it's going to be as locked down as we think it's going to be locked down, so get your physical copies, kids.
I can see another way. I see people building just pretty much emulators and selling them. I mean, not just the program, just putting it on some cheap hardware, because we're thinking in the future, PS4 is going to be running on equivalent of some crap cheap shit you can buy for $50.
So you mean someone like everybody emulating on Raspis today?
Yeah, so pretty much you buy your emulator, your Raspi with whatever games pre-installed on it from Alibaba, and they ship the shit to you.
Well, that might be how it's done too. Who knows? I mean, something I'm going to be getting into with putting together some of these things once I get a workshop up and going is building some of these concept machines and things like that. And I've been going back and looking at old software because I don't want to run these things that are all tied to online accounts and requiring that. I want something a little bit more like the old Windows XP days. Now,
yeah.
And you know, running old versions of Windows but connecting to the internet's kind of a dumb idea. So I've been trying to explore alternatives, and I've come up with some interesting ones that aren't exactly going to be friendly to use, but I'm not far enough along in any of them to actually do anything useful. But I have found there is stuff for running old Amiga software on PCs, and I'm not talking about the WinUAE emulator, although that is an option. But there's actually some lower level stuff where you like run a lightweight FreeDOS just to get the machine to boot and then launch the emulator so that all the hardware gets passed to it. And the reason I'm thinking this stuff is the machine is old enough that the architecture just was never designed to do all this online tracking, but there's still some modern stuff to be able to like get a web browser going. So I kind of think there's going to be a sweet spot somewhere in there where you're going to be able to have an independent system that's usable and does useful things, whether it's games or internet or whatever, but it's not modern enough that you have to worry about the modern malware and things like that fucking with it, which is why like grabbing a Windows XP or a Windows 7 is a bad idea, is because those things. Now, there's ways to do it, like you could do like a lightweight Linux or something like that if you're wanting something more internet focused, but that's not quite the game I'm looking for, you know what I mean? So
yep.
I'm still trying to sort all that out. Open to suggestions, though, if people know of good stuff. I mean, for like building CyberDecks, right? It's like, what would be good to run on a little portable machine that you want to connect to the internet with so you can do, you know, your email, your messaging, things like that, but it's not going to be, you know, it's not a fucking iPad where everything you do is tied to an account, right? So, and we're half an hour in just on the first story. Damn it, I didn't mean to do that tonight. And I went light on stories knowing that we would. Would JVM be able to have security in it? Java? I mean, yeah. Yeah, the JVM can do some separation, but oh, I see what you're saying. I don't know about that. I'm playing more at the idea, especially because I'm wanting to use like modern NUC boards and things like that, of running some kind of a lightweight host OS and then hosting more legacy stuff inside of that. So you use something like a stripped down Linux or something to bootstrap the machine, and then you're booting into whatever environment so that you can. You know, at one point I was playing around with QB64 trying to see if I could do something with like FreeDOS, but that didn't really work out either. So it's like there are DOS web browsers, by the way, but that wasn't going in down a useful path. So I need to figure that out a little bit better. So next article, unless you guys had anything else left on this, because I know we kind of rabbit holed on that one.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, right. Last thing I have on this one, maybe it's time for our generation to step up and actually write some law, some consumer protection laws regarding software ownership. I know they say it's a license for a movie, but from a consumer standpoint, you're buying a movie. You should actually own it.
I think you're right. I'm just trying to come up with policy that is appropriately narrowly targeted to solve the problem you're talking about these companies representing that you're purchasing something, whereas you're really buying a license tied to an account that they can turn off at any time. And it's, you know, hidden behind 150 pages of legalese that you have to say you agree to just to, you know, log into your web browser in the morning. That's not right. But at the same time, you don't want to over-constrain it so that companies can't innovate anymore. There's a reason your seatbelt hasn't changed in, you know, what, 45 years.
There's a reason it fucking should have.
Well.
I've got a million reasons why it should have changed. But anyway, that's rabbit holing again.
Yeah, so it's an easy comparison, though. So, like I said, there's a balance. I don't know that I know where it is, and I don't trust myself enough to try to define where it is. That's the problem. I've ran enough D&D and vampire and mage games to know that when I think I know what a set of rules does, I'm not always correct.
And I've been told point blank that I shouldn't be involved in any rulemaking. Ever.
Oh, rats, they'll fight it no matter what, because you're telling them what to do. It doesn't matter whether you've done things properly or not. You know, even talking about trying to get that effort of trying to get that line correct, it doesn't matter. They're going to fight it anyways because you're fucking with their business.
even doing this sort of thing, you'd find yourself on the wrong side of the Clintons.
Well, nobody wants to go there, so... speaking of being on the wrong side of government, this one's from The Verge. The FBI used facial recognition to identify Capitol rioter from his girlfriend's Instagram posts.
Rock on, FBI?
The FBI said it's used facial recognition technology to track down and arrest an individual suspected of taking part in the U.S. Capitol riots earlier this year. The case, which was first reported by Huffington Post, is notable for the FBI's acknowledgement that it used facial recognition not just to confirm a suspect's identity, but to discover it in the first place. Stop and think about what that means. It means they had video footage of this guy, clear enough video footage that they were able to feed it into a facial recognition system, and then they threw it. They just started going through Instagram hoping for a match.
Yeah.
That's what that means.
Watch what you put on Instagram.
It's not like who we think it might be this guy. We know that they're connected to this person. What accounts does this person have? We'll look at their Facebook. We'll look at their... No, they didn't know who this guy was. So, yeah. According to affidavit shared online by Huffington Post, agents tracked down an individual named Stephen Chase Randolph. Oh, well, they gave him three names. Must be a terrorist. Using crowdsourced images. You ever notice that whenever they're talking about a suspected shooter or cult leader, they always make sure that they have three names? What is that? Nobody goes around using their full name. They're always, I'm like, yeah, everybody's got a middle name, but you only ever see it when they're like, you know, suspected serial killer. Using crowdsourced images from the riot, including those shared on Twitter by a group known as Sedition Hunters. So that's where they got the source pictures from.
In other words, Antifa doxes.
Yeah.
That's say what it really is.
Okay. They searched these pictures on the web using an open-source facial recognition tool known to provide reliable results. So it's probably one of the deep learning engines. This led to a public Instagram page apparently belonging to Randolph's girlfriend, which contained numerous images of the suspect. Pictures on the account showed Randolph wearing the same items of clothing as in stills captured at the Capitol. This includes gray knitted hat with the Carhartt logo embroidered in white on the front. This hat was key for tracking Randolph's activities across multiple videos and images, according to Sedition Hunters, dubbing him Gray Carhartt Hat. That's creepy. Because Sedition Hunters isn't a law enforcement agency. It's a group of volunteers.
No, it's a bunch of doxes from Antifa, man. Yeah. That's who they are.
And they just identified some guy and said, here, and passed it off.
Oh, they did all the fucking legwork for the FBI and handed him a report.
My issue isn't with FBI using facial recognition software or even looking at Instagram. I don't know if I trust their source material. If it was... we pulled this from our security cameras, or pulled this from...
That's what I was assuming
the
it
cops
was.
Cameras, or we pulled this from cops' dashboard camera, possibly, and I hate to say it because I don't trust corporate media, but if it was CNN footage, I would consider it even somewhat more legitimate than just,
here's some random person
saying, here are images from the riot. How do you know it's not... images from, I don't know, a dozen rallies that have been held in Washington. Did they actually have him in the Capitol?
I mean, how do you know it's not somebody who's reasonably good at Photoshop?
Hopefully they checked the source material for something that obvious.
You know, you see the face cut out and pasted in.
Yeah. It's like, why is this white man on a black body? Is this the payday glitch again?
Yeah, it's the total
my God,
payday
he's
glitch.
Changing clothes fast.
Yeah, but that's what you get for owning a distinctive hat. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yep.
Don't fucking wear that shit. Don't take your phone. Just, you know, take a tip out of the enemy's fucking book. Just wear all the same color. Look the same. Hide your hair color. Wear sunglasses. Jesus Christ, you fucking people are stupid.
Wear a mask. It's trendy right now.
I mean... Yeah.
Oh, he is in one of the pictures. That's why they call him the Carhartt hat guy.
The FBI affidavit says Randolph was seen assaulting multiple U.S. police officers. Quote, in the process of pushing barricades to the ground, the suspect and others knocked over a USCP officer, causing her head to hit the stairs behind her, resulting in the loss of consciousness, the report. The subject then continues to assault two other USCP officers by physically pushing, shoving, grabbing, and generally resisting the officers and interfering with their official duties of protecting the closed and restricted U.S. Capitol. Okay, that bothers me there. You're not supposed to close the Capitol. Not during...
No.
I mean, it's supposed to be public. You know, this whole closed grounds thing is bothers me a bit here, too. And
there's a lot bothering me about all of this.
Well, yeah. But then you read the description. It's like, oh, he was... No, they were in a mob. Yeah, he probably pushed some people, but it sounds like he was just trying to get through.
So they ever prosecute the... Was it 35 to 36 dudes who beat the ever-living fuck out of a 7-Eleven owner and left them nearly dead in the street?
Not that I've heard
of. Did they use facial recognition for any of that? What about, I don't know, some of the Kenosha shit with all the fires? Any facial recognition being used on that? Is there any, enhanced shopping facial groups out there taking photos of the enhanced shoppers? Like, it's just a scare piece, man. That's all this is.
After finding Randolph's girlfriend's Instagram account, federal agents then found Facebook accounts apparently belonging to his family members, revealing his full name. They then cross-referenced his identity with state driving license records and surveilled him at his home and workplace where he was spotted still wearing the same hat.
Dickhead.
To confirm his participation in the riots, two undercover FBI agents approached him at his work at April 13th. They struck up conversation with Randolph, in which he admitted to attending the riots, saying, "I was in it, and it was fucking fun." Randolph also said he'd seen a female police officer being pushed over by the barricade, suggesting that the officer had suffered a concussion because she curled up in the fetal position. Randolph was arrested in Kentucky a week after this interview took place. The case shows how the FBI is using facial recognition and crowdsourced images to track down those who participated in the January 6th riots. Such tools are not always necessary to find suspects, but their use appears to be becoming increasingly common. So if you're going to attend a riot, you want clothing that you're going to get rid of immediately afterwards, and you're going to want to change your appearance, and maybe try to get all of your family to not have social media with you in it.
I'm going to go with RU has the right idea. The black block has a manual for a reason.
Exactly.
Just because they're using it doesn't mean the other side can't use it either.
Exactly. And
I'm not feeling bad about him getting arrested.
Neither am I.
I'm just presenting it.
Being overcharged, but he did commit criminal trespass. Give him the fine and a couple weeks in jail. Let him go about his life.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if he really did assault some cops, deal with it. You know, go to court, deal with it. But I don't, and again, like you guys, you know, if the dude was out there, you know, beating people up and they got him on camera doing it, yeah, throw the book at him. Fine. I just thought it was interesting that they were taking, you know, pictures that people were giving them from crowdsourcing from Twitter and running it through facial recognition and finding people's Instagram and Facebook accounts.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew they were doing it, but fuck.
I mean, the tactics have been used on both sides.
Oh,
same
sure.
With the enhanced shopping for the last 390 days.
I'm not even making a judgment on the politics, although you're right that we haven't seen them doing the same thing for some of the other riots that happened last year.
I would just like to see justice being used equally, applied to all the same. Because that's what justice is.
And I want to make sure they have proper source material when they're doing these searches. Like, did they go grab a camera from someone they knew was there? Like, the cops at the end of the ride, it's like, hey, dude, I noticed you taking pictures. Can I get a copy of your SD card, or can you shoot me these photos?
I'm not sure
about getting them after the fact from random people.
Well, that's it. Most of it was just cropped out of video that was, you know, taken off of YouTube, and then their photographs picked out the best and then bundled up and sent to the FBI.
And if they had, I don't know, forget the legal definition of these words, but if they had, if they were reasonably certain it came from that day and that riot, then yeah, but that's the only question I have with the source material is, how valid was it? But if they had, like I said, CC cameras from the White House. Oh, no, it was the Capitol that got stormed. So, security cameras from the Capitol. Yeah, search all those images. You know those guys were there. You know they were committing the crime. Or the CC cameras from around the Capitol, because there's dozens of them.
Yeah.
And this is just the penalty you face for putting your shit on Facebook. It's not your photo album. It is the public. You're posting your picture for everyone to see. So if the FBI can use it to find you, to charge you with shit, you shouldn't have broke the law, or you shouldn't have had a Facebook page while breaking the law.
Well, to quote one of my favorite Jim Carrey movies, stop breaking the law, asshole. Because that movie is fucking funny. Especially when he kicks his own ass. Yeah.
Oh, in the bathroom, yes, beats the shit out of himself. Can you continue? Yes, I can.
I just like to say I'm not with these two.
Don't like that movie?
Fucking Jim Carrey, dude. Are you kidding me?
That's back when he was funny.
He's not. He's never has been funny.
Fair enough.
I'm gonna say not all of his movies were good, but he had good movies or good instances. I liked Fire Marshal Bill. It may have been carried too far, but Fire Marshal Bill was funny to me. I don't think they should have made Cable Guy.
Well, speaking of monitoring things, surveillance, and are you being right? Here's the next article. Are you sent me? I don't know if it was this exact one. It was the same story, though, but RU sent me this one. This link's from Yahoo News. The Postal Service is running a covert operations program that monitors American social media posts.
What is the post office doing monitoring shit other than where my package is?
I don't know.
It's under the Five Eyes.
Law enforcement thing.
Oh, no, they have a law enforcement arm.
Yeah, it's part of the Five Eyes. They were given that power. Was it the Patriot Act?
Another reason that fucking thing should be repealed, set on fire.
No shit, right? I wasn't for it then. I'm not for it now.
The law enforcement arm of the U.S. Postal Service has been quietly running a program that tracks and collects Americans' social media posts, including those about planned protests, according to a document obtained by Yahoo News. The details of the surveillance effort, known as ICOP, or Internet Covert Operations Program, have not previously been made public. The work involves having analysts trawl through social media sites to look for what the document describes as, quote, inflammatory, unquote, postings, and then sharing that information across government agencies. Analysts with the U.S. United States Postal Inspection Service, Internet Covert Operations Program, good God, that's a business card, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, that's a title that you need like three cards across your desk. To, you know, like something. You need the name card that's going around the room, like in Monty Python. Yeah. You know, and distribute it through. What did I do? I just lost my place making that joke. Analysts, okay, yeah, okay, there's the name, monitored significant activity regarding planned protests occurring in internationally and domestically on March 20th, 2021, said the March 16th government bulletin. Marked as, quote, law enforcement sensitive, unquote, and distributed through the Department of Homeland Security's fusion centers. Locations and times have been identified for these protests, which are being distributed online across multiple social media platforms to include right-wing-leaning Parler and Telegram accounts. So I guess it's a right-wing protest. A number of groups were expected to gather in cities around the globe on March 20th as part of a worldwide rally for freedom and democracy to protest everything from lockdown measures to 5G. Okay. Parler users have commented about their intent to use the rallies to engage in violence. Image 3 on the right is a screenshot from Parler indicating two users discussing the event as an opportunity to engage in a fight and to do serious damage, says the bulletin. No intelligence is available to suggest the legitimacy of these threats, it adds. Yeah, it's people shit posting on well, Parler in this case, but I mean, come on. The bulletin includes a screenshots of posts about the protests from Facebook, Parler, Telegram, and other social media sites. Individuals mentioned by name include one alleged Proud Boy and several others whose identifying details were included, but whose posts did not appear to contain anything threatening. ICOP analysts are currently monitoring these social media channels for any potential threats stemming from the scheduled protests and will disseminate intelligence updates as needed, the bulletin says. And they have a couple of pages of the bulletin here. It looks like a government bulletin. They've got screenshots of some of these things, of, you know, people just saying, you know, they've just got little chunks where somebody's saying something. And I'm just thinking, I'm just looking at it going, it's shit posting online, man. I mean, is it me or do I feel like there's, it's a massive waste of time because they're, I mean, yeah, you've probably got a handful of people who really are coordinating to go do, you know, bust some windows or shake up a protest or, you know, get in a fist fight with Antifa or whatever. But how much of it is like 12-year-olds talking bullshit like they're on Xbox Live?
I was watching a chat and there was one person, very vocal, a lot of shit posting about killing people and stabbing white people and just doing all horrendous shit, you know, burning the White House sure. down, things like that. And after a couple of days, this person started bitching about certain things and was wanting to murder more people and blah, blah. Turns out that this person has cystic fibrosis and a heart condition is bedbound. So are you going to prosecute that person for shit posting? Because they're not on the right side either. They're on the other side. Is that enough to get fucked up for shit posting?
Well, I don't think they're talking about prosecuting for shit posting. They're talking about having cops near these rallies.
Well, they're monitoring them. They're looking. They're trying to catch leads on, you know, rallies that might go violent, right?
Yeah.
And I don't blame them for that. I just feel like it's a very noisy channel to do it. You know.
I'm just kind of surprised that it's the post office. I'm still tripping on the law enforcement wing of the guy that brings me Mug Club and was happy that I have Mug Club. I just want to stop him one day. He's like, did they give you a gun? Please, God, say they gave you a gun. You're a law enforcement officer now. I don't want you to bring me bills. I want to see you arrest a man. I want to see you tackle someone, Mr. Postman.
I know. I think you're looking at it the wrong way. Not all postal workers are law enforcement, but they have their own law enforcement within postal.
I want that guy to deliver mail, too.
That's no, he's too busy.
Job.
He's too busy combing through Facebook looking for your nudes, man. That's all he's doing.
Oh, God, I didn't know I could do that on Facebook. I have a Facebook now that can have a big picture of my ass.
Man, I'm pretty sure you don't want to do that on Facebook. Twitter, on the other hand, totally.
I'm not sure they can track that because it would be the only one online. What would you compare it to? I mean, Big's phone's been killed, right? There's not a copy of my ass.
I would say a lot of this arm of the postal services would go hand in hand with customs inspection. You know what I mean? Those two agencies probably work together.
Yeah, they usually have customs agents in the post office.
Customs and that enforcement would probably work heavily with counterterrorism. And they'd probably work closely with the FBI. So it's all one big circle of fuck you.
If the post office has its own law enforcement branch now, we need to reassign the custom agents to ICE.
Whatever happened to ICE? Are they still a thing?
Yeah, yep. They still exist.
Okay.
One of their, I don't want to call them bases, but one of their little buildings got firebombed a couple days ago.
Okay, I missed that one.
You know what the sad part is? The reason it's in the post office is probably that's where there was extra budget and that's where they could put it.
Yeah.
That happens so often with government agencies where, you know, it all comes down to budget and who has extra dollars that they can take on a task, right?
Like, does anyone else feel in the last 10 years that you guys have pretty much thrown out the rule of law? Like, you weren't meant to be spied on. You weren't meant to have your phone conversations tapped without warrants.
Oh, yeah. Well, our government's well past what the original founders were against. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I think you've slid way further past it. And because it's happened so quick, no one's really noticed it yet. Like, once they install the federal police throughout the entire America, I think that's when the rubber's going to meet the road. Once you realize that they've taken away community policing from yourself, and it's going to be a top-down approach from Washington itself, which will be the biggest state at that point, will people realize that they've done fucked up?
Well, and, you know, you go back and look at history, and you look at the revolution, you know, the United States Revolution, they didn't rebel until they had enough bullshit in their face. And the problem here is a lot of this stuff isn't in their face. Yeah, it's happening. Yeah, it's in the news. Yeah, we read about it online. Yeah, we all get on here and bitch about it. But the average person isn't dealing with this. In the revolution, they actually had tax collectors saying, no, you don't get tea because you have to pay us stupid amounts of money. And that...
Yeah, but that was... That was only really felt in Boston at the time. But outer areas were still very self-reliant.
You had to have enough that enough people were pissed off enough about it that they were actually able to get a mass movement going. It took a while.
Are you? I want to kind of correct you on the Boston Tea Party. It was tea everywhere in the colonies, and the reason Boston got famous is they're the only one that didn't turn away the ship. Every other American harbor actually turned their supply ship away, saying, if you dock, we'll burn you. Boston didn't, so a few people in Boston decided to throw the tea overboard.
Didn't they tar and feather the captain?
They tar and feathered several tax collectors. Okay. And British judges, now that I think about it, too, that were too loyal to the crown.
I knew that Boston was a big center of a lot of it, though. I'm not talking about the Boston Tea Party, but the disgruntlement
Boston was a big center of it.
In Charlestown.
Charlestown, Pennsylvania. There were several whole areas that were, you know, once they got going, that was the center of it. But between tea taxes and the Stamp Act, that was kind of the one that broke the back, was that you got enough people pissed off that you were able to get a mass movement going. And unfortunately, that's what we're kind of seeing with the Black Lives Matter stuff is, the people who started Black Lives Matter were, you know... You look into the founders, that's a whole ball of crazy. But you've got enough people out there who are just generally upset because they feel like things are not being treated equally because of people's skin color, which if that's really the reason this stuff is happening, then they're right. It needs to be fixed. But how many of those people out there marching truly want the kind of crazy ass seize the means of production, means of socialism that the people who founded it want?
Look, this is going to sound cruel, but it's not. I don't think they even understand what it is.
No, I don't think they do either. I think they're just, they're buying into the name. They're buying into the movement. And, you have enough people who've been ginned up, in this case, by the media, because... Frankly, if you look at the statistics, the bad interactions were going down.
Every other show in the world does statistics on this. I'm just looking at the aspect of how much education does the individual out there doing some preemptive Christmas shopping? What do they truly understand about Marxism? What do they truly understand about free market capitalism? Do they understand what Keynesianism is?
No,
things
don't.
Like that.
That's the problem.
Then don't fucking riot in the street. You don't know what you're fucking talking about.
You know, I think Rats just called me old.
Thank you, Rats.
Anyway,
because he's not the oldest one here.
So, anyways, the rest of the article goes on about talking about the fact that it's weird that the post office is doing it and that it's a civil liberties thing And, you know, there's an argument about should the government be doing this? Well, you're publicly posting it, so they're going to do it. You know, you really think you're going to get law enforcement agencies to go, oh, nope, we can't look there. That's you know, yeah, it's public, but we can't look at it. No.
Yeah, I'm just thinking it should be the FBI. I still don't think my postal guy should do it. But Morps is probably right. The post office had the budget and four guys doing nothing, waiting to go postal. I'm like, guys, we need you to look at the internet.
I mean, seriously, that's what happens in bureaucracies. So that's why you get some teams doing things that are weird. So RU's not in the IRC there, rats. Let's see. I've been reading more about Marxism in the U.S. So this is something Haratz has posted in the IRC for you, RU. I've been reading more about Marxism in the U.S., and it was largely and summarily taboo as the, oh, no, the Russians like that for the duration of the Cold War, so you couldn't touch it with a 20-foot pole. Mm-hmm. So people often know very little about it, at least here. That's fair.
Just relabeled it. They relabeled it as social justice. You're right that the Marxism and communism has a very big stink on it in the United States, so... Like any good marketing campaign, they just rebranded and relaunched it under a different name. But scratch the surface, and it's all hardcore Marxists.
Well, and I think the last 10 years, the stigma's actually been waning from both socialism and communism in this country, unfortunately.
Well, and that's why you hear me saying, you know, seize the means socialism. Because gotten so confusing as to what people even mean by it that I want to make sure I'm talking about the old school political ideology of you don't have private property rights, you will own nothing and like it.
I've been watching this chat for the last, I don't know, 5 days straight, and quite a few times there's been reference to Australia being communist, and people have had to correct other people in this chat saying no, that they're hardcore socialists. Which is neither correct either. But, dude, most of these people are ignorant as fuck in the chat that think that, you know, New Zealand is communism. They have no idea what other countries are.
Most of the people in that chat are probably not very old.
Most of them are
granted
capitalist with a very large safety net.
Yep. Trust me, we get taxed like fucking capitalists.
Next story is from The Independent. An internal Facebook memo has inadvertently, or a leaked internal Facebook memo has inadvertently leaked the social media giant's tactics after its recent data scraping controversy. Approximately 535 million accounts, one of which belonged to Chief Executive Mark Zuckerberg, had their personal information exposed. Online tools allowed anyone to check if their information, which included phone numbers, was revealed. Facebook said it would not notify more than 500 million users about the incident, claiming it had full visibility on which users would need... that's distracting. And now I've got a very funny picture in my head. Thank you, RU.
You should see it happening, man. They're actually fucking boot scooting. This is hilarious. Talking about cultural appropriation. Watching black people line dance is great. Sorry, back to reality.
Online tools allowed anyone to check if the information was revealed. Facebook said it would not notify more than 500 million users about the incident, claiming that it had full visibility on which users would need to be notified. It also said users' inability to fix the issue, as well as the data being publicly available, factored into the decision. The leaked memo now reveals more details, stating, long-term strategy, assuming press volume continues to decline, we're not planning additional statements on this issue. Longer term, though, we expect more scraping incidents, which I think another one just got published, like, today, and think it's important to both frame this as a broad industry issue and normalize the fact that this activity happens regularly. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Facebook saying, no, it's totally normal for companies to lose your data all the time. Happens all the time. You should just bend over and take it.
Just a glitch.
To do this, back to the quote. To do this, the team is proposing a follow-up post in the next several weeks that talks more broadly about our anti-scraping work and provides more transparency around the work we're doing in this area. While this may reflect a significant volume of scraping activity. We hope this will help to normalize the fact that this activity is ongoing and avoid criticism that we aren't being transparent about the particular incidents. Okay, before we read any more about the article, go ahead. I heard you about spinning up there, Madman. Go ahead.
Oh, that was me hiccuping. I was just trying to see if they caught his vertical eyelids blinking.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've never seen
that
man
blink. It happens all the time.
The memo was sent to a Belgian tech news site, Data News, intended for Facebook's European, Middle East, and African PR team. Facebook confirmed to The Independent that the memo, which was a coverage summary circulated throughout the social media's PR team, was genuine. Quote, it shouldn't surprise anybody that our internal documents reflect what we've said publicly. As LinkedIn and Clubhouse have shown, data scraping is an industry-wide challenge, and we are committed to tackling and educating users about, unquote, company spokesperson said. Again, you know what? I don't need to read the rest of it. RU's lifestyle is still probably correct because these companies are basically, what this really means, they're giving up. We're not going to be able to stop people from scraping our service. So anything you post on a Facebook account, an Instagram account, YouTube, any publicly available social media, anything you post in there is public, will be scraped, will be associated with your account, and your information will be out there. Now, to be fair, when I was growing up, the phone company would publish a phone book, and you could get yourself delisted, but I don't remember people losing their shit about a combination of phone numbers and names being in a book that anybody could look up. So,
and also somewhat, this isn't their back-end information being lost. This is stuff that people are publicly posting,
and
someone is scraping with a bot program.
They're using interfaces to collect data through different surveys or different search tools or abusing contact location tools. Basically, it is third-party people abusing Facebook's services. This is Facebook admitting that they're not going to fix it anytime soon.
It costs them money, see? Why would they bother?
So yeah, just be very aware. Anything you put on Facebook, you might as well be spray painting it on the side of your house.
It's the world's largest billboard, and you're just putting your info on it.
It's not
private. If you don't want the world to know it, don't put it on Facebook.
It's not
private. You got a great thought about what I always thought Facebook was like a really disgusting bathroom. And just shit scrawled all over the wall.
That's a pretty good analogy for it, actually.
And fucking stickers everywhere.
Hey, he who writes upon the walls rolls his shit in little balls. Mm-hmm. He who reads these words of which should eat those little balls of shit.
You thought about that.
Well, the little turds over 3 pounds must be lowered by hand.
And I guess that would make the links out to the links from people's Facebook profiles out to their OnlyFans accounts the glory holes. Anyways.
Yeah. Now you're getting them, whoops. See how my world is painted? It is painted like a hobo's lifestyle. Dirty syringes and shit-filled stalls. And they wonder
Next
why
article.
I don't go to parties.
I'm just laughing at Rat says he's too drunk for this.
Oh, it's a sad penguin. Linux should not be sad. Linux should be happy, penguin.
This article is from NeoWin. The story's still developing a little bit, but damn. Linux bans University of Minnesota from sending in kernel patching. So the current Linux kernel maintainer has told the University of Minnesota, you are not allowed to submit patches to Linux, period, full stop. We're not accepting any from your university because, let's see, I think the article explains it. Greg Korf Hartman, who is one of the head honchos of the Linux kernel development and maintenance team, has banned the University of Minnesota from further contribution to the Linux kernel. The university has apparently introduced questionable patches into the kernel of Linux. The UMN has worked on a research paper dubbed on the feasibility of stealthily introducing vulnerabilities into open source software via hypocrite commits. Obviously, the open source software here is the Linux kernel, and the university had stealthily introduced use after free vulnerability to test the susceptibility of Linux. So far, so good. Perhaps, as one can see, it is ethical experimenting. However, the university, the UMN, apparently sent another round of obviously incorrect patches into the kernel in the form of a new static analyzer, causing distaste to Greg Korath Hartman, who has now decided to ban the university from making any further contributions. They have the exchange from the email here, from the email chain, from the mailing list. Greg, I respectfully ask you to cease and desist from making wild accusations that are bordering on slander. These patches were sent as part of a new static analyzer that I wrote, and its sensitivity is obviously not great. I sent these patches to hopes to get feedback. We are not experts in Linux kernel, and repeatedly making these statements is disgusting to hear. Obviously, it's a wrong step, but your preconceived biases are so strong. Yeah, so this guy's laying it on thick, right? He's like, it's like, oh, how dare you say this about me? Ooh. And, I love his response, which just, I mean, it doesn't quite go back to the old days of a Linus thrashing. Like, you know, Torvalds would just, you know, totally let you have it. But this is pretty close. So Greg responded, "You and your group have publicly admitted to sending known buggy patches to see how the kernel community would react to them and published a paper based on that work. Now you submit a new series of obviously incorrect patches again. So what am I supposed to think of such a thing? They obviously were not created by a static analysis tool that is of any intelligence, as they are all the result of totally different patterns, and all of which are obviously not even fixing anything. So what am I supposed to think here that you and your group are continuing to experiment on the kernel development community by sending such nonsense patches? When submitting patches created by a tool, everyone who does so submits them with wording like found by tool XXX. We're not sure if this is correct or not. Please advise," which is not what you did here at all. You were not asking for help. You were claiming that these were legitimate fixes, which you knew to be incorrect. A few minutes with anyone with the semblance of knowledge of C that can see that your submissions do not do anything at all. So to think that a tool created them and that you thought that they were a valid fix is totally negligent on your part, not ours. You are the ones at fault. It is not our job to be the test subjects of a tool you create." It's like, bang. "Our community welcomes developers who wish to help enhance Linux. This is not what you're attempting to do here. Do not try to frame it that way. Community does not appreciate being experimented on and being tested by submitting known patches that are either do nothing on purpose or introduce bugs on purpose. If you wish to do work like this, I suggest you find a different community to run your experiments on. You are not welcome here. Because of this, I will now ban all future contributions from your university and rip out your previous contributions, as they were obviously submitted in bad faith with the intent to cause problems." And then you get an update because the leadership at the university said, "Wait, what?" Somebody got told this looks bad. Your entire technology department just got smacked. Actually, that would be an excuse to change schools. If you're in the computer science program at this university and you're hardcore into cloud computing and programming and all that, this would be an excuse to change schools, believe it or not, because, you know, there are a lot of people who work in software development who read the Linux kernel mailing list, whether or not they actively participate in Linux kernel development. I mean, I used to subscribe to it just to keep up with what was going on. I haven't had time lately anymore, but I used to. And if you see somebody coming from a school... No, you're not banned from GitHub or anything like that. They're just not accepting any kernel pushes. But I'm just saying this would affect your future job prospects if you have people who keep up with this mailing list. Like, hiring managers and shit follow that. It's like, oh, no, we don't want anybody from that school here. I mean, as widespread use as Linux has these days, that would not be a good mark in the community to be have a university if you have a degree from that university. Just saying. Update: Lauren Teven, from the associate department head of the Department of Computer Science and Engineering at MNU, contacted NeoWin and gave the following statement. Leadership at the University of Minnesota Department of Computer Science and Engineering learned today about the details of research being conducted by one of its faculty members and graduate students into the security of the Linux kernel. The research method used raised serious concerns in the Linux kernel community, and as of today, this resulted in the university being banned from contributing to the Linux kernel. We take this situation extremely seriously. Sure you do. We have immediately suspended this line of research. We will investigate the research method and the process by which this research method was approved, determine appropriate remedial action, safeguard against future issues if needed, and report back our findings as soon as practical. So
how do we know it wasn't their actual psychology department running a long troll?
We don't. But if they don't fire the guy who is doing the guy who is doing the research who approved it, I doubt that they're going to get back in the good graces of the Linux community anytime soon.
Yeah,
that's a good way right there to get. You get an entire university blackballed from Linux kernel development. That's I don't expect there was a lot of patches coming out of there, but I know a lot of schools encourage their students to get involved in open source projects and contribute patches. I know a lot of schools do that. Hell, I was encouraged to do that when I was in school. I just wasn't very good at coding C. I mean, I could do it, but I'm not very fast at it, so.
So this could also be possible kudos to Linux if they caught the crap before it got distributed or before it got widely distributed. Because it shows that someone is auditing the kernel and making sure shit, just random shit, doesn't get into it.
Well, yeah. The same guy later went on another rant because apparently there's a lot of companies that are using Linux but not really contributing to the kernel development at all. You know, and apparently they've contacted a few companies that seem to be heavily using Linux. He didn't name the companies, but was told that, you know, they were sold by these companies that they thought other people were funding the kernel. So it's interesting, though. I mean, the research is kind of interesting, of taking the social engineering aspect of introducing code into an open source project to try to get vulnerabilities in. I get that. I don't know that the Linux kernel was the best project to try that against, because you have some very serious, very hardcore developers in there. You know what I mean? I don't know that that's the one I would have targeted.
I might not have targeted it just for not wanting to get your IT department blackballed from something that every server uses, but if you're going to do this kind of test, you test with something that it could get caught in. Otherwise, the test is useless.
Well, that's true, too.
Because if there's only like one guy checking patches for some project where you get 100,000 submissions, then yeah, it's not that you're good at sneaking shit past them. It's that there's no way for them to catch it.
Yeah, I would think they would have had better luck going after, like, pick a mid-sized distro that maintains their own tool set kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like the Enlightenment Library guys, or maybe Elementary OS. I don't know how open their tool chain is, but some of their desktop apps, things like that, where you've got a smaller target, you've got somebody more likely to do it, and probably less eyes on it. But at the same time, when you get caught doing your research, yeah, you're not getting blackballed from something most servers run these days. All right. Let's do this. Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is kind of confusing, but a very cool tool. And that is, oh yeah, the sound clip. I think that this soundboard does not like that WAV file. I'm not sure what it is. That's the only one it has problems with. I've recut the audio a few times trying to just see if I could clear it up, but there's something glitched with that. I may have to like run it out analog and re-record it back into a fresh, completely fresh file to get it to see if that clears up whatever the hell's wrong with it. This tool is called CyberChef, and pretty much it's kind of a plain English data processing tool. So, you know, if you have lots of things you need to try to sort through, maybe you're doing a unit conversion or date conversions, formatting, basic logic, key encryption, or decoding of things, you know, or you're just wanting to play around with a chunk of data and you're not quite sure what it is, this thing runs in the web browser. It's open source, of course. You can download it and run a local copy, or you just run the copy because it's all JavaScript, right? So it's just running in the browser. It's not sending your stuff anywhere. At least it didn't look like it in the few minutes I was playing with it. But, you know, like if you have a bunch of stuff that's Base64 encoded or something like that, or you're trying to do one of these puzzles where something's like, you know, encoded different ways and things like that, or you're trying to extract a bunch of data out of something, you can throw it at this tool, build out kind of a plain language recipe, give it your data, and then see what you get, and it just runs in the browser, right? So yeah. If you're trying to decode something or play with different data sets, it's pretty cool. It's got some forensics functions. It's got some networking functions. It's kind of a one-off thing. Like when you need it, it's great. The times you need it, it's probably going to be kind of in between, depending on what you do. But you know, it's something I'm keeping in my bookmarks list just because it's handy. It's called Cyber Chef. It's pretty cool. It's something to play with. Like I was playing around with like Base64 encoding and decoding stuff in it, but you can load files. You can load, all kinds of different stuff it reaches out and does.
You just drop what you're wanting to play with in the input field, hit bake, and see what it comes out?
Kind of, yeah. So, you know, you've got a recipe there. So you could, you know, if you wanted to try to decode something, let's say you think something's encrypted in Base64 or something. So you would go into encoding, find Base64 decode, drop that into your recipe, then drop what your chunk encoded input is, and then you get it in the output, or something that has, you know, kind of the reason I found the tool. I've got some APIs I've been using at work that require the authentication to be encrypted and hashed in a very specific way. And I didn't want to have the clear text credentials in my script. I'm like, well, if it already wants it, you know, Base64 encoded, and then what was it on top of that? I don't remember now. But I was looking for something that would do that just quickly in the browser so that I could encode the credentials and then copy the encoded credentials into the script, right?
So and, to Base64, and then you dropped your credentials in and hit bake?
Yeah, pretty much.
Fuck on.
And then I could copy and paste that into my script, and that worked great. And, you know, that's I quickly skimmed through the JavaScript looking for network calls, and I didn't see any. So I'm like, okay, yeah, it's doing all this in memory, just in the browser. So, but yeah, it's got a bunch of other stuff it does. But, you know, so if you're just wanting to play around with some data, it's a nice little tool for that. You know, even something that's just converting date formats, it's kind of handy. And then the last thing I had for you tonight in Digital Dojo was a link that RU sent me. It's a Firefox add-in called Sound Fixer. So pretty much it gives you a little bit of an audio control panel in Firefox. It doesn't work with every website, but it definitely, you know, they're saying it works with YouTube, and I'm sure it works with some of these other sites. But it lets you do things like fix, if you have audio that's only in one channel, or they've mixed the video so it's super quiet or super loud, or you need to fix the panning, you can just do some quick, simple audio tweaks in the browser. So, you know, we've all had that movie where the audio was just like, you know, 5 decibels too quiet.
That's what it's good for, man. That's what I've been using it for anyway.
So,
does it fix off audio where the audio's a second behind the video?
I don't know. I haven't played around with it that much. I've just done it for the sound.
I don't see anything about fixing that, but that'd be a nice one to fix too, where the audio lag is. The problem is sometimes the audio is behind, not ahead, so I don't know how to. Yeah. So anyways, though, I thought it was a cool little add-on and definitely worth having, so. Because there's a lot of websites out there that have shitty audio. There are a lot of videos, I mainly
use it. See, Sky News has a different level than any other YouTube account or clip. Oh, and it's always a little too low.
So you're just using it to normalize.
Yeah, and it's in a browser. I don't have to go in and play with any settings or anything like that. So, yeah.
Well, it's usually not too bad to go in and turn something down. But when something's too quiet and the volume's already all the way up, that's the problem.
And if you're wearing a headset, you know, there's just no other way to turn it up if it's all the way up.
Well, there is, but then it gets dangerous when you forget that you've cranked it, you know, stuck an amplifier in line and cranked it. So you can...
Well, that's what I mean. If without the headset on, I'm running through an amp anyway. I can crank it as high as I want.
Yeah, you can't exactly do that with a headset, because the next time you launch a new game and you forget that the headset's
Jesus,
cranked.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Playing a Bethesda game or something like that, and it launches, or an EA or something.
Yeah, it's like the audience is now deaf. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like, so. Anyways, that's all I have for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on a Galaxy... Fucked up the closer. Pure Decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 Radio site, subreddit. In the IRC tonight, myself, Sardonyx, Cyberlard, Psychros, DP View, Herats, Madman, and the Coffee Maker. Madman, closing thoughts.
Who told the Coffee Maker about this? I mean, he's been here for a while, but I don't remember ever telling a Coffee Maker to come listen to the show.
One of those new G5 coffee makers, man. It's always connected to the internet.
You should start
even
throwing,
when you don't want it to be.
You should start throwing bang commands at it, start seeing if somebody's bought or something. It's like, you know, message the coffee maker, bang, start, see if somebody starts screaming about their coffee somewhere. Somebody's smart coffee maker connecting to IRC by accident. Oh. Of course, anything smart these days usually means somebody just slapped an ESP32 in it and hoped for the best. So, are you closing thoughts?
Have a good weekend, everyone. Try not to do too much politics.
Yeah, we all need to do that.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's all I got. Plain noises.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Nose down and call the night.
Oh, fuck. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Shut up, Wesley.